This podcast is supported by Other Tone. Other Tone is a podcast that glimpses into the minds of our culture's geniuses and how they think about life, art, and everything in between. Get a seat on the couch next to Pharrell as he links up with people from the worlds of music, tech, business, art, and fashion for conversations that are human, inspiring, unexpected, and fun. Check out the first few episodes featuring brilliant guests like acting phenom Zendaya, sensational pop artist Rosalia, and creator of Black-ish, Kenya Barris. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
John, what's up?
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm in the Q zone, dealing with the pandemic.
I'm bummed, man.
What are you bummed about?
It's a lot happening, and I just feel like at every turn, some other thing comes and just kind of like crashes into the thing that's already a crash. You know what I mean?
All right. That sounds very heavy.
Yeah. It's really frustrating. I kind of want to talk to Joe. You think we can get Joe on the phone?
Yeah. I think I have. Let me just connect something here and let me dial him up. Hold on a second. You're all right, though? You good?
Yeah. Yeah. I just kind of like want to get some stuff off my mind. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, I'll get Joe. Hold on.
Hello.
Yo, what's up?
What's going on?
I'm going to mute my mic, guys, while you talk, all right?
Yo, what's good, man?
Oh, you know, Saturday night.
Yeah, Evermore is like, it's heavy on my shoulders, dog. It's heavy on my shoulders.
It's a lot of balladry.
It's been a long week already, adventure-filled week, and I kind of don't know how to take this record. Did it kind of catch you a little bit? Like, what's up?
I feel like I was swimming against the current for 24, 48 hours.
To be fair, that's your favorite lane to swim in.
Yes, it's true. And then maybe I had a little bit of a breakthrough, but still paddling.
You think Karen? You feel like Karen's in our headspace for this? You wanna see if we can get her?
Gotta get Karen, I guess.
All right.
You want me to call her?
Yeah. Should we ring her up?
Yeah, hold on one second.
All right.
Hold on. If it doesn't work, let me know, all right?
Okay.
Hello?
Karen?
John?
Yeah, it's me and Joe.
Hey, Karen.
Hey.
You got a minute?
Yeah, you know, I'm on vacation, but...
Yeah, so live from an undisclosed location.
Mm-hmm.
Joe and I are like we're in a wave right now. We're head scratchy. We need some input. We need your perspective. Where you are sitting in the part of the country that you are in, has Evermore reached you?
I'm not that far from you. I didn't get on an airplane, FYI, okay. Podcast listeners.
Okay.
I got in a car.
She's in the wilds of the jungle somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you might have seen I tweeted something today about this. I actually spent part of the day putting together the parts of Folklore with the parts of Evermore that I like. I have some thoughts about
this. Would you call something like that?
Yeah, what would you call that?
I might call it Folkmore.
Ooh, that sounds like something we should revisit later on.
Yeah.
I don't know, when something like this happens, when there's like a national event, a global trauma, like I feel like it's weird if we don't process it together, you know?
Yeah. I mean, shouldn't JP be here?
For sure. I mean, you think he'll answer the phone?
Oh, yeah.
Yo, Pedro, can we ring JP?
Yeah, I think so. We should have the bandwidth here. Hold on one second.
Hello?
JP?
John?
Yeah, and Joe and Karen.
Wow.
Pedro,
your whole staff.
This should be the podcast.
Are you? JP, yo, we're all here. Evermore has arrived. I know you wrote about it. We have been chipping away at a unified field theory just for the last couple of minutes. You ready to be a part of this? You want to be in on this conversation?
Happy to join you.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your Everyone Has to Be Duplicitous, a music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
You booked the night train for a reason, so you could sit there in this hurt. But bustling crowds or silent sleepers. You're not sure which is worse. Because I dropped your hand while dancing, left you out there standing, crestfallen on the landing, champagne problems. Your mom's ringing.
We're all here on Saturday night to celebrate, memorialize, analyze, dissect, agonize over the release of Evermore, the second Taylor Swift album of 2020, which puts her in elite company with Bad Bunny, Autechre, Rio de Young OG, Taylor Swift, two albums in 2020.
Is it two albums?
Thank you. And that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. So, Joe, you and I chatted for a bit yesterday, and I think we both feel similarly, which is it's obviously very hard to experience Evermore independently of Folklore. They come from, if not the same exact sessions, they came from the same set of circumstances and largely the same collaborators, although notably with a different weighted average from one album to the next.
And we'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to get right into it. I struggled with Evermore. I struggled with Evermore more than Folklore. There are maybe strangely more eccentricities on this record that I find intriguing, but in the big picture, I think I struggle with it a little bit more. JP, you wrote the review of Evermore, and I wonder how you feel about it now that you've had another day or two to kind of absorb and process. How do you feel about it on its own? And then how do you feel about it vis-a-vis the prior record?
Well, this is Use Your Seclusion, volumes 1 and 2.
Wow.
You motherfuckers did that. Popcast listeners, you bonus. This is free. This is free, this podcast. That content.
Anyway, I had 24 hours to sort of listen to it, write about it. I think it's basically not as good as Folklore. I think the surprise aspect of Folklore is gone. I think a lot of the songs are kind of similar to Folklore.
Yes.
They're still good songs. The Taylor Swift craftsmanship slackens a little bit, but does not let up. But song for song, I'm sticking with Folklore.
Karen, where you at?
So Evermore had the intriguing effect of making me sort of like Folklore more. Folklore, not Folkmore. Look what's happening to me. I still don't think it's great. I think 9 of the, are there 16 songs on the first album? 9 of the 16, I think, are good, or good slash great. And on this one, 6 out of 15.
Data. Karen coming with data.
Listen, I spent a lot of today making that playlist that I mentioned earlier, and I stand by it. I did find myself liking a bit more of Folklore because it felt more like songs and less like moods. Evermore definitely felt like a little more like a wet sweater kind of a vibe, kind of just dragging some stuff down. But I think that arriving in December, it's a more appealing time for me to be exposed to this music than I was in July. I wasn't really in this frame of mind in July. So partially, I think, why I like Folklore better. But I also think Folklore does have better songs and more Jack Antonoff, which I know we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Joe, they are two children of similar mindset. And I will say one thing that I was really spending some time thinking about today was I feel like I feel about Folklore and Evermore the way a lot of other people felt about Reputation, which is to say, this is a variation from the mean that we can't get our heads around. It does something, or kind of like works in opposition to some fundamental trait of Taylor Swift that I or somebody else likes and seems like too much of a distraction. And I think Reputation, in terms of its very overt flirtations with hip hop and very, very, very centrist pop, does that for a certain kind of Taylor Swift fan, whereas these choices do it for me.
I hear that.
Which is to say these choices send you into a tizzy.
I mean, beyond, like, what's like a tizzy to the 10th degree? Like, it's whatever that is.
So my thing with Evermore, as I listened to it the first few days, it's funny that you, Karen, you said a wet sweater. I talked in the beginning about swimming against a current. You can't get away from wetness.
Yeah.
It's soggy. It's soppy. And to me, Evermore is the album, John Caramonica, that you thought Folklore was.
Mm.
I go back and I hear Folklore, you know, with however many months passed, and I hear crispness, I hear pop songs, basically, with some decoration, but still just Taylor Swift songs. To me, Evermore is much further down the road of The National, much fussier, much more dour, too mid-tempo. And look, I think the lack of Jack Antonoff, I'm not somebody who is in love with everything that Jack and Taylor have done together, but I think they hit on a really interesting place in folklore. And I think that it cut up the record in such a way that it kept you on your toes. And I think that you really miss that in Evermore. It feels very one note. And the mood of it was just hard for me. I will say that on my third day with it, I had some breakthroughs. I think maybe you guys have this with Taylor, but I find with her more than almost any other artist, when you first spend time with her new albums, there'll be this period where you have snippets of like 6 or 7 or 8 different songs all stuck in your head. Yeah. And usually that happens for me within 24 hours. This time it took much longer. It took 48 hours plus, but it did happen. And so I'm still spending time with Evermore. But I also want to have a conversation about the form, because what we've done so far on this podcast is just compare it to folklore. Could it ever have been anything else but in competition with and lesser than in the way that most sequels are?
So this is something that I think, JP, remind me if I'm wrong, but I feel like on the Albums podcast, we kind of tipped our hat a little bit to the idea of eras in pop music. And obviously you have your biggest pop stars referring to certain albums, not as albums necessarily, but as eras. This is like an Ariana thing, or, you know, it's like, I'm going to wash clean my Instagram and start over because a new era is arriving.
Taylor mentioned it explicitly in her Instagram.
Example. Right. So here's an example where an era is not an album. An era could be 2, or depending if you believe the TikTok conspiracy theories, 3 albums. Heavy sigh. And so, no. And, you know, sometimes I'll get a little bit of guff when in a year-end list, I will put 2 or 3 albums together.
Or four, or five.
Right. But I do think that that's reflective of if an artist is in a kind of consistent state of mind or state of creativity, you kind of have to look at all of that body of work together as one larger thing. And so I don't think, not only do I not think that you can never really hear Evermore without hearing Folklore or linking it to Folklore, I don't think you should hear Evermore without linking it to Folklore. I think it would actually be kind of like a dereliction of duty to sever them.
What if it came out a year from now?
It wouldn't. After I get my Moderna vaccine, you think I'm sitting in the house listening to this?
We're not writing for Moderna over any other brand.
No, Pfizer. We accept all. If any vaccine wants to advertise on Popcast, please feel free to send a note. We'll pass you along to the right people. I'm just saying, like, Folklore was the rare record that was born of the current circumstance, felt indebted to the current circumstance, probably couldn't have existed without the current circumstance. I don't think that if Evermore was released next June or September or whatever, when hopefully most of the country will be vaccinated and out and about, I just don't think it functions in that way.
So I want to talk about the form of it. While we're speaking about the album sort of abstractly and in theory, as opposed to talking about the songs, which I assume we'll get to, one of the coolest things I think Taylor is doing here, which is what Ariana Grande did with Thank You Next, is, and of course this is in part due to the pandemic, is totally break the mold of 12 or 18 month album cycles, which had mostly been done away with in popular music because of rappers.
Yes. Hence, like I was saying, it's Future. I mean, right. I was joking about Rio de Young OG, but like, it's, you know, any rapper we care about probably had 2 albums that came out in 2020.
Right. And a pop star of Taylor's ilk, of her caliber, were the sort of last hold-ons to this. You know, you make an album, it takes forever. It's a whole era. You change the way you dress. You change what your Instagram looks like. You go on tour for it, whatever. The fact that she just 1-2 punched like this can be totally revolutionary for anyone under her. Of course, it's been done, but for her as the sort of last hold on to that. But I wonder what would have happened if she just would have released this like a rapper and just said, this is a deluxe. I mean, Lil Uzi Vert released Eternal Atake this year, then released the deluxe edition, which was just tacking an extra totally separate mixtape onto the end of it.
Like 12 more songs.
So yeah. If this was framed as B-sides, if this was framed as a deluxe edition, if this was just framed as Folkmore, call it Folkmore, whatever, I think it wouldn't be held to the high standard that Folklore was and met And now this, I just feel like it's going to be really hard for this to ever feel like anything other than that kind of afterthought.
Sure. I will say, just looking at some of the online reception, even in the podcast Facebook group or on Twitter at 12:15, right after it came out, where people who should know better are talking about how this album is saving them from depression. You know, it's just like, it's people are expressing devotion to this record in a way that doesn't make sense to me. And maybe we are looking at it in too narrow of a framework. Maybe the way that we're looking at it is the wrong way, because I do think by and large, most Taylor fans, whether super intense or super casual, are just going to say, oh, another record. Cool. No big deal. They're not going to think of it as, should this really be bonus track 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 on Folklore?
I do want to point out that Taylor Swift didn't have to go on tour this year after Folklore. Instead, she could return to the studio. I have a wacko theory about this, which is that she was thinking of making a Christmas album.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wait, I feel you. There's at least
two songs.
This is
the damn season.
There are two, at least two songs, maybe three, that I thought had Christmas song melodic parts that were not overt, but that were like, if you had isolated them out and put them in somewhere else, they could easily be a Christmas song.
She definitely had the time of year in mind. I mean, we know she's obsessed with her birthday, which is on December 13th. She turns 31, 13 backwards. She loves numbers. She loves December. She's released Christmas music before. And I really do think this album works as a winter to Folklore's fall. And of course, it's a nice gift to fans. Like, I don't think anyone who cares about Taylor Swift as an artist or a songwriter is mad to get 30 plus Taylor songs in a year, especially with her trying new things. But I think almost her size does her a disservice, because when you come up with 15 more songs and you're Taylor Swift, it's silly business-wise not to package it as a full album.
Do you mean that she felt that there was no other choice but to present it this way, that presenting it as a deluxe was not an option?
Or a Christmas album or a B-sides or whatever. What I'm saying, like, if you have 15 Taylor Swift songs, which are better than most other people's 15 songs that they created during a pandemic, you might as well call it a capital A album. I don't know. What works for you on this and what doesn't?
I'll go first. Why not? Just from a arc of the record perspective, I was more invested in the early songs and in the closing songs. I felt like I kind of got lost from Tolerate It, frankly, kind of all the way through Cowboy Like Me. Let's actually listen to Tolerate It, because I do think it's sort of like good Taylor Swift song, capital G, capital T, capital S, capital S with a trademark. It's kind of like good Taylor Swift song, but it just doesn't hold for me personally. So let's hear a little bit of Tolerate It.
I take your indiscretions all in good fun. I sit and listen. I polish plates until they gleam and glisten. You're so much older and wiser, and I wait by the door like I'm just a kid. Use my best colors for your portrait. Lay the table with the fancy and watch you tolerate it. If it's all in my head, tell me now.
First of all, big picture, I really feel like the thing I said on the last record, and Joe, you know, you saying that this record actually is what I thought the last record was. If that's the case, then the way that the production really, really hamstrings Taylor is much, much clearer on this record. Because in a funny way, I'm glad that I watched the Disney film. I went back earlier today and I watched the Disney film about Folklore.
I love that we're calling it a Disney film. Because it's neither a film
nor Disney.
Disney's role is it's on Disney Plus, whatever it is. I went back and watched it. And obviously those versions of the Folklore songs are oftentimes less fussy, less busy than the actual album versions. And it gave me a lot more affection for some of the songs that I didn't like or like less.
They were so sturdy in those performances, I thought.
And I was grateful because I'm like, oh, okay. Whew. Okay, you know, like the thing that I like is still there. It's just like all this other like buzzes and flies and gnats flying around. Like that's less of that. But on this album, the production is over time doing what I felt it was doing on Folklore, especially in this middle stretch. And also, from a structural perspective, The thing that I think Taylor does well is incredibly tautly structured pop songs. And they could be pop country, they could be pop quasi R&B, just straight pop. But the structure is what's consistent across all of that. There's stuff going on this record that it just feels either incomplete or spaced strangely. I don't know. It was maybe the first time I've listened to a Taylor album and thought, is she moving away from that thing? And that's the thing that I think she's best at. Because even on Folklore, even if there were parts of it I didn't like, I was like, the parts where Taylor's being Taylor, I'm with that. Here, I'm like, is she just going to abandon that altogether? I don't know. What do you guys feel?
I disagree. I mean, I think these are verse, chorus, verse songs. I think they're still very traditional pop song structures. The middle stretch of the album after Happiness is a little dicey. But Happiness is a really solid, clear Taylor Swift song. Nobody, No Crime is her Dixie Chick song.
Or her Carrie Underwood song.
Yeah, but it's so odd. That's the thing. It's like, you're Taylor Swift. It's like, you're going to do like a B-minus level of Goodbye Earl? Like, what's the point?
Watches Gone Girl once.
Yeah, I mean, why do this?
It's on my list of six songs that I like.
This stretch that you guys are talking about.
I don't
fully agree. Well, actually, for me, it's just a two-song stretch. It's Dorothea and Coney Island. This is the morass of the National.
I'm not a National guy, but to me, those are two of the strongest songs on the album.
Oh, wow.
Can't take you anywhere, Joe.
It's funny that John, that you singled out Tolerate It, because that to me is also representative of what I don't like on this album. But the way that I would describe it is theatrical. I like that she's writing outside of herself. And, you know, there seems to be a real divorce narrative going through this album. I don't know what's going on in any of these guys' marriage. But Tolerate It in particular, it feels like melodrama to me in a way that I thought Taylor could always pull back with a little bit of camp. And then also just her like surgeon's songwriting. And Tolerate It, Happiness, even the Haim song, to me, all of that, it just gets a little syrupy. And I felt it in Exile, which I think was why I felt like Exile was such a momentum killer in the Folklore track list. It's almost Broadway, and it's too much for me.
I was going to say Cabaret.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about this album is she's decided she doesn't have to be autobiographical. And the stories that she's telling are not as exciting as the ones that are closer to her heart. I mean, she's stepping back. She's being a craftsperson on this. She's saying, I can write a song about, I don't know, Cowboy Like Me, another dead spot on the album for me. Why do you need to tell a story about people who hustle old people? This is like, huh?
My complaint is not about the theatricalness of the lyrics. I'm fine with her telling the stories. I just don't need the music to follow. What I think is an example of part of it that I like that's not like that to me is just the little pockets of melody, like in Dorothea, the lines about Tupelo, which like, okay, Taylor Swift, just like picking a city that sounds great in a lyric. And then the next line where she, you know, is playing off of the word no and sort of rhyming with itself. Like even the songs I don't like always have at least one or two little melodic or lyrical pockets that I think are like just vintage Swift. But like something like that to me, she's obviously speaking way outside of herself and is painting this whole world of character as a TV actress, but it lands as long as the music feels grounded.
Right. But to your point earlier about after a first listen on a Taylor record, routinely you come away with certain passages glued to your head. The busyness of this music. I mean, on Dorothea, I literally, my note is like these pianos clang in my head. There's so much happening and it's frustrating because I feel like I'm having to sift through stuff to then make an assessment of the storytelling, of the structure, of the lyrics, of the poetic quality of the thing. And I'm not saying that there aren't vocalists who are successful in contexts like these, or there isn't music like this that's successful. But my struggles with this record and with Folklore have really made me think about how we as critics or as fans arrive at projects and what we bring to a project and how that affects our reception of it. It's impossible to listen to every single thing ice cold, clean slate. And to be honest, I think we probably shouldn't arrive at it ice cold, clean slate. But when you are a supporter or a fan or enthused about a person who does a particular thing well, and then that person pivots to do a different thing, or at least a different version of the thing, it's hard not to feel a little bit gut punched.
Or you could be happily surprised. It's like, this person can do this too. This is interesting.
Conceptually, yes.
Oh, but also, I don't find it as cluttered as you do, John. I thought on my first listen to this, I actually thought maybe they listened to Karamanica after Folklore because the vocal is more upfront on this. The vocal is not buried in hums and buzzes as much, except for that sort of stretch in the middle of the album. I don't find it that cluttered.
Should we listen to Coney Island, which is
duet? Are you going to do that to people?
No, we don't.
Let it rip. I want to talk about it.
I almost don't hate the song. Yeah, this is Coney Island featuring The National, quote unquote.
The question pounds my head. What's a lifetime of achievement? If I pushed you to the edge, but you were too polite to leave me. Do you miss the rogue who coaxed you into paradise and left you there? Will you forgive my soul when you're too wise to trust me and too old to care?
My name is Frances Robles. I'm a national and foreign correspondent for the New York Times. When you read an investigation that I wrote, there's a lot of things that you don't see. I might have spent hours driving around in circles, making sure I wasn't being tailed so I don't give away the location of someone in hiding. I might have spent an entire day crisscrossing the county, knocking on a dozen people's doors, looking for exactly the source who will help me expose government corruption. I might have read through 500 pages of documents looking for a single sentence. But that's what it takes to tell these stories right, and I'm proud to do it. If this kind of journalism is important to you, journalism that holds power to account, that gives voice to the voiceless, then you can support it by becoming a New York Times subscriber. Go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
This duet is far better than either of the Bon Iver albums, And Bon Iver, to me, is leagues beyond The National in terms of making music. But there's a reason why every time Justin Vernon shows up on these Taylor Swift albums, the music has to change. And the time signature, they become different songs because they're not natural duet partners. Whereas Matt Berringer, I think, is a natural, beautiful duet partner for Taylor Swift. And the silliness of the lyrics that they have in common, this arcade ring, this centerfold, those are classic National lyrics. Like Taylor doing Matt Berringer, I think it works for some reason.
That's an interesting take. I agree with you vis-a-vis the Bon Iver song on this record, the title track. I don't agree vis-a-vis Exile. I mean, I know not everybody hears Exile the way I hear it, but Exile to me remains kind of like almost like a 70s R&B duet. I know it's not that, but like the kind of like the huskiness, the intensity, the kind of vibration of the angst feels very classic soul to me, even though there's nothing about the song itself that musically would indicate that. Evermore on this record, you know, especially coming at the end, I felt tired when I got there and I felt very tired when I left. That's how I felt about that. You may well be right as far as Taylor doing The National. It is no secret that I have not spent loads of time with the catalog of The National, which I'm cool with.
I think what you said about Exile being a momentum killer in the beginning of Folklore is totally true. And I only started to like that song when I put it towards the end of the version that I made. And I think that sequencing on both of these records is completely screwed up. And figuring it out, I think that's partially why I had such a negative reaction to Folklore the first time. And once I rearranged it, I was like, if I was able to rearrange it and also take out all the songs I don't like, sure. Now I like it.
But, which could be true for any album of any.
I know, that's obvious. But I'm just like, why do you think that the sequencing was so whack on both of these albums?
Great question. I don't know the answer. I mean, we know how important track fives are to Taylor. I really don't have an answer. I feel like maybe because the songs themselves were not as crisp as her prior songs, whatever kind of like alchemical thing that ordinarily would lead to a solid Taylor Swift sequence, like something that it's like it got lost in the washing machine somewhere. And so it was just much harder to string songs together. I don't know.
It's hard for me to get like an emotional foothold. Like I'm in somewhere with 'Tis the Damn Season of visiting home and hooking up with an old flame. And then I'm in Tolerate It, which is like middle-aged people of like, well, with a large age gap in their relationship, trying to come to terms. I'm like, these things are not jiving for me.
to me, these feel a lot like exercises. Like, I don't think that Taylor is ever necessarily a master of sequencing, because she makes, you know, long pop albums that have to cater to many different audiences in the past before these two albums. But I think there's still something to be said about putting together a story over a long period of time when you're making an album over the span of months, as she does so meticulously. And to me, this feels less like a story. And starting especially with Willow, which I've realized is, I think, a strong track, but it just does not feel like an opening. Even the one, I feel like, really, really set the tone for what you were about to experience, even with the meta sort of lyric of being on some new shit. To me, especially because this album starts the way it does, it just did not feel distinct or new or like you were entering a different space.
JP, what's a standout song for you on this album?
Well, I like Ivy.
Love Ivy.
Ivy is the invisible string of this album.
Yep. Love invisible string.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit of Ivy and then we'll get into it.
How's one to know? I'd meet you where the spirit meets the bones, in a faith forgotten land. In from the snow, your touch brought forth an incandescent glow, tarnished but so grand. And the old widow goes to the stone every day, but I don't, I just sit here and wait, grieving for the living.
Ivy is a Jack Antonoff, Aaron Dessner, Taylor Swift combo platter. And I think they all contributed something to it. I think it's one of the songs where she came up with the metaphor first, ivy growing over a house, and then maybe constructed the narrative to fit the metaphor. I like the sound of it. I don't think it's cluttered. There's a banjo in it, so it's old Taylor. It's just a really pretty song. It's very self-contained. It tells its story very convincingly.
So everybody else likes Ivy.
Tell us why you don't like it.
I don't know that I have a strong reason to not like it. I listened to this album maybe 5 times now, and none of the listens did it really like hit me hard.
Wow, I'm surprised.
But it's in the middle of that stretch of other songs, which I'm finding like extremely molassesy. And so I think possibly it's not being done any favors by being on the back end. Even though I like Coney Island, I still think it's a little molassesy, but on the back end of Happiness and then Dorothy and then Coney Island, maybe that's just not where it should be. Karen, what's a standout for you?
Marjorie is in my top 3.
Interesting. Let's listen to Marjorie first.
The autumn chill that wakes me up. You love the amber sky so much. Long limbs and frozen swims. You'd always go past where our feet could touch. And I complain the whole way there. The car ride back and up the stairs. I should have asked you questions. I should have asked you how to be. Asked you to write it down for me. Should have kept every grocery store receipt. Cause every scrap of you would be taken from me. Watched as you signed your name, Marjorie.
There were a couple of lyrical moments and repetitions in the song that I really liked, and I felt like the production was not too fussy. Marjorie and Long Story Short and Ivy, I felt like could be on other Taylor albums. I think that's why I liked it.
I found it a little cutesy for me, the wordplay, a little cutesy.
I thought she pulled it off because we all know that Taylor loves playing with cliche, and she does it again here, one for the money, two for the show, like that sort of thing. And I find that more often than not, she doesn't pull those off for me. But I thought the verse lyrics to Marjorie feel universal and totally avoid cliche in a way that I think was really impressive.
It didn't transcend for me. Like, I think that thing that you're describing, I agree, is like a very one of Taylor's real gifts. But that specific thing that you're saying that she did, it just did to me, it felt boomerangy. It was like every time it's like, oh, we're going that way. No, we're coming back this way. Oh, we're going to go that. No, we're coming back this way. It just started to feel like I was getting yanked around a little bit.
That's poetry, John. Poetry.
I'm unfamiliar with it. Joe, you have a standout you want to point to?
Yeah, I want to talk about Tis the Damn Season.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes. Very good. Let's listen to a little bit of Tis the Damn Season.
If I wanted to know who you were hanging with while I was gone, I would have asked you. It's the kind of cold, fogs up windshield glass, but I felt it when I passed you. There's an ache in you, put there by the ache in me. But if it's all the same to you, it's the same to me. So we could call it even, you could call me babe for the weekend. Tis the damn season right this time. I'm staying at my parents' house, and the road not taking looks real good now. And it always leads to you.
To me, this is it's a Christmas song, but it transcends that. And the production tricks really work. The drums sort of in the other room, the way that the first chorus is half of the chorus with no drums and then builds. And when she gets to the mud on the truck tires rhyme, I'm just like, that is like, it's so crisp. It's so Taylor, but it also sounds new. And the storytelling is
really great.
Yeah. Transportive. Yep. You know, it's
really,
like,
really solid. Probably to me, maybe the sturdiest lyric, like just on paper, the sturdiest lyric on the record.
Yeah. I mean, messy as the mud on your truck tires is like something that Taylor could have written when she was 16 and didn't get to. And I'm happy that she eventually did.
Totally, totally agree. I'd like to talk about closure. Let's listen to a little bit of closure.
Yes, I got your letter. Yes, I'm doing better. It cut deep to know you right to the bone. Yes, I got your letter. Yes, I'm doing better. I know that it's over. I don't need your closure, closure, your closure, your closure.
Put Taylor Swift on the hyperpop playlist.
Wow.
Do it.
I did not see that coming.
Do it. Do it. Closure and Long Story Short, which come towards the end of the record. Huge, huge textural shift in terms of the nature of the instrumentation, in terms of the tempo.
They found the percussion. They found the percussion in the back room of the cabin.
Yeah, I mean, they literally lost it for like 9 months and 26 songs. And then all of a sudden, it just reemerged. Now, it's interesting because, again, to look back at the Reputation era, what Taylor is being faulted on for the people who falter, and which I am not among them, is a kind of dalliance with an aesthetic that maybe is not a natural aesthetic to her. These aesthetics on these two songs, I think, are also not natural to her, but I actually feel like they're successful dalliances. It's interesting to hear her voice kind of like dappled with this sort of percussion and how she has chosen to write and sing, knowing that the percussion was going to do to her what it is doing. I found it really, really effective because they came as a real left field turn, especially after that middle run of the record. And I wonder if you guys were taken by them or were kind of like head scratchy about them.
I like closure a lot. I do want to point out it's in five, which
you mentioned that. Yeah, yeah. You would know the answer probably. Is this the first non-4/4 Taylor song that we know of?
Tolerate It is also five.
Okay. Is this album, the songs on this album, the first time she's gone
I
away?
I think they probably are. I'm not sure. You need a Taylorologist. It's the first time it struck me. But Closure, I like for its spiteful. It's the first spiteful song on the album. Happiness has a tiny bit of resentment, but this is like, no, I'm not going to be your closure. I'm not forgiving you. This is old Taylor. This is like getting back at the ex.
Old Taylor, new context, though. Again, and using this context very effectively, whether it's the kind of the light mayhem of the time signature change or the intensity of the percussive choices, she's using them to her narrative advantage, not simply as, oh, look at this cool thing I tried. There's narrative weight to these choices.
Also, she's always been a very rhythmic lyricist. So giving her the drum noises and the weird meter to bounce off of, it's a craftsman's challenge, but she manages to make it work emotionally as well.
Long Story Short has that most rhythmic Taylor flow to it. Yeah. To me, it felt really a lot like the back half of Lover, like those little sort of like forgotten Lover songs clustered near the end, but not quite at the end. But it also felt like Lover subject matter wise. I do not need another Taylor song about how she had a hard time on the internet and then found love. like, to me, this just sounds like another Kim and Kanye, and about how much, you know, she loves her boyfriend that she found after she got flamed on the internet. Like, I realize that that was a really defining moment for her, but like, it just doesn't fit in this world to me. She's covered this subject and covered it well, and I just don't need it anymore.
Actually, I downrated that song because it reminds me a lot of Last Great American Dynasty. And she's working with the same people. It's sort of the same beat with a different production. The melody hops around in a similar way.
You're totally right.
Karen.
Yes.
I think you were the first among us to put together a Folkmore playlist.
I was. I woke up today determined to do that.
I want to say it's Saturday. So that's what that's the first thing you thought about on a Saturday. Shouts to you.
On my vacation.
Vacation in an undisclosed location. That's what you did. So what I would love to do, because Joe, I know you did it. I also did it. JP, I asked you to do it. I think we should all run down and we won't dwell too much on individual choices, but if there's anything that's jumping out at folks, feel free to explain or to question. But Karen, do you want to run down your sequenced Folkmore song list?
Yes, the sequencing has a lot to do with it, but I actually will be interested to see how much overlap there is between all of us.
I'm super curious.
Okay.
And I don't typically do this because I just feel like if they put the record out the way it is, that's how it is. I like it. I don't like it. I don't think too hard about it.
Well, if we didn't have 30 something songs to choose from, you know, I think people are doing this all over the internet now. That's what the people on Twitter told me.
And heavy on the Facebook group. There's a whole sub thread about it.
Yes, I was unaware, but it makes sense because also I'm an editor and these albums needed an editor to put things in the right order and to take out the things that don't need to be there. So that is my larger point.
All right, so go in, run us down from 1 to 15. Run it down in order.
Okay. We begin with Invisible String.
Strong choice.
Yeah, yeah.
I really feel like that should have been the opener of the first record. Gold Rush, Betty, oh. Seven, Ivy, No Body, No Crime, Long Story Short, Mirror Ball, This Is Me Trying, My Tears Ricochet, which is a little sweet in the middle of my album, August, Tis the Damn Season, Exile, Suddenly in the Right Place, Marjorie, and Epiphany.
Okay.
All right. I hear it.
I like it. I like it. And I more than I like it, I feel it.
I think tempo-wise, production choice-wise, and like story arc-wise, this actually does tell the story of this era.
Can we talk about Gold Rush briefly?
Yeah.
Please, go in.
So Gold Rush is the only pure Antonoff and Taylor song on this album. I don't know if he's being phased out. Maybe she's really into her shiny new toy of Aaron Dessner. I don't think, for the record, that she should be done with Jack Antonoff.
No, nor do I.
They're still reaching new places.
Maybe he wanted to get out of the house. You know, like Dessner just stuck in the house. Maybe Jack just wanted to get out of the house.
Right? If you look at the credits to this album, the vocals were recorded at Long Pond. So presumably while they were doing the Disney Plus film, you know, that's Dessner's house. So
do you think Cuomo is aware of how many people were at Long Pond Studio?
I don't know the count.
But I just feel like, you know, like we're shutting down indoor dining. There's like percentage limits on how many people could be indoors during the coronavirus pandemic. I'm just saying, has anybody looked into Long Pond Studio and does anybody know what maximum occupancy is and are they near it? Because if we have to shut it down as a way to get Taylor to go back and work with Max Martin or something, like just something to think about. Just throwing
right.
that out there.
You're right.
Just throwing it out.
You're killing the momentum of my track list.
sorry.
But Gold Rush is to me, the strangest feel of the construction, right? It has this weird intro that's this very dreamy sort of like cartoon. I see like a princess cartoon happening with the gleaming, twinkling. And then this really snappy chorus, the Gold Rush bit, the walk past quick brush. You know, that's like some of that rhythmic Taylor flow. And then the strange drawn out verses about what it must be like to grow up beautiful. I'm curious, John Caramonica, if you like this song.
I mostly did. Just quickly, let's listen to it for a second. Let's listen to some.
And
double vision in rose blush. I don't like to fall, it feels like flying to the bone crush. Everybody wants you, but I don't like a gold rush.
I do mostly like this song. I like the lyrics. I like how Taylor sings this song. It reminds me of something that I thought a lot about on Folklore, which was different from prior Taylor records. There were songs on Folklore where I felt very differently about, say, minute 0 to 1 than I did about minute 2 to 3, because the songs were moving in different directions in different sections. And I feel like you could almost segment them out in some ways. Gold Rush was a song that felt like that to me, where I felt like there were parts of it that I really, really was connecting to, and then it would pivot and it would go wander in another direction.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It changes a lot, and some of the parts are better than others.
And I have not historically felt that with Taylor songs, broadly speaking. I genuinely have not felt that with Taylor Jack songs. I feel like what they do for each other is almost like tighten each other up. There's a tautness to their collaborations. I was actually surprised. I listened to this record a couple times before I looked at the productions, before I looked at the credits. I didn't realize it was that.
It feels like Jack doing Dessner in the way that, long story short, feels like Dessner doing Jack.
Totally agree with that. Yep.
Ooh. Oh. Okay. With that kind of heat, Joe, give me your list.
So I think, you know, anybody who's listened to this much of us talking about Taylor this year knows I probably like these albums the most. So I'm currently at 19 songs.
Wow.
Still
wow.
Editing. Karen, you know, sometimes, you know, I like to file a little long.
I'll make some cuts.
We trim it back. Okay. So I'm keeping it natural, starting with the one. Then I'm going Tis the Damn Season, Last American Dynasty, Gold Rush. Then this is, I think, my real artistic choice is I'm playing the August trilogy in chronological order.
Okay. See, yeah, I was wondering if anybody was going to get into that.
That seems like an obvious move.
I'm going August, Betty, Cardigan.
Wow. Yeah,
okay.
In plot chronological order.
They're also ABC.
Yes.
Ooh.
Ooh. I think it's a choice, but it's working for me. And then hitting with Mirrorball, which to me, for my money, best Taylor Swift song of the year, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, top mm-hmm. five of her career.
It's up there. It's up there.
Invisible String, Tears Ricochet, Dorothea, Willow, Illicit Affairs, Coney Island, Ivy, and then the sort of finishing touches, Epiphany, Marjorie, Hoax, and ending on Peace, because I want to end
wow.
on uncertainty and negativity, not
wow.
storybook ending.
I had a similar impulse with ending, but not a totally different direction, but a similar impulse to end in that kind of ambiguous way.
That was an interesting list, Joe.
That was actually both interesting for the selections and for the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
I cut some stuff I like. I cut some stuff I don't like. There's no Bon Iver duets on my album. You know, so, but I also killed some darlings as well.
In service of the sequence.
Yes.
This is 19 tracks. What would be the longer version? How many?
Even longer?
36, 34.
No, I'm just wondering, like, how many you felt were unworthy?
If I only cut songs that I don't actually want to listen to, I'd probably only cut 2 from Folklore and I don't know yet on Evermore.
Okay.
Joe, what are they paying you? Be honest, man. What are they paying you?
Look, I'm just a fan who has been asking for a singer-songwriter Taylor Swift album for 10 years, and we got 2 of them, and there's a lot of good music on there.
Are you saying that I'm an ungrateful fan?
I am.
Wow.
No, and look, you don't have to. You can be both a critic and a fan. You can That's be right. one and not the other at any given moment, but like, we've been asking for singer-songwriter Taylor albums. She's stretching her legs in a way that I don't know that any pop star of her size in this moment is going to do in the next little while. And I'm into the experimentation.
I agree with those statements at the end.
As I have said previously, criticism is an act of love. JP, I asked you to do this exercise. You want to drop it on us?
I'm still wrestling with the sequence, frankly.
So am I, to be fair. So am I.
I had lists from each album. And as you have been discussing, I've been juggling.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Real time.
It's a live one.
It's a live one. So I'm going to start with Ivy. Into the One, Into Happiness. We're going to start kind of moody and slow. I think Happiness is one of the best songs on this album. I don't know why we haven't jumped on it.
Interesting. Really?
Yeah, I do not agree, JP.
Oh, wow.
But carry
really?
On, carry on.
These things happen. Okay, Invisible String after Happiness. I'm going to go to Exile there. Karen's going to tune out right there.
This is such a dramatic album so far, JP.
I know it is.
And then after Exile, I think we're going to rev it up with Closure, Champagne Problems, then the trilogy, August Betty Cardigan. What's left? Illicit Affairs after that. And I'm mixed on Marjorie, actually. I think it's a little too pat, but it's really beautifully, it's a beautiful sound.
Yeah.
So let's put that there. And then, just to make you guys all hate me, we're putting in the version of My Tears Ricochet from the Long Pond Sessions.
Oh, I can't believe I didn't think. I can't believe I didn't think of putting the live sessions on.
Purple.
Oh.
How many tracks is this, JP? What does this add up to?
You can't see the notebook page in front of me. I've lost count.
He's doing this analog, baby.
Yep.
We're going to need to go back and count.
Let's see. Somebody's going to have to go back and count for me. I think it's probably like 14 or 15.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like 12 to 14. Okay. Like that.
And then maybe we'll put Evermore at the end. I'm mixed on that song too, but I kind of like the way it turns into a Bon Iver song halfway through and then Taylor takes it back from him.
Yeah, but you know who doesn't like the way it turns into a Bon Iver song halfway through is Bon Iver.
Why do you say that?
There's a purposeness of vim, Karen.
Oh, a John Caramonica word.
A special, an exclusive special to the way that he sings on Exile that I just don't feel on Evermore. Sidebar, in the Disney film where he is where he is filming, where he looks like he's about to rob the house,
his home office,
if I'm not mistaken. So when I did the Bon Iver feature for the magazine a few years ago, I went to Eau Claire and spent some time at the home studio, which is not that, but that apartment, I think, is maybe the apartment that I did spend some time in, which is kind of in downtown Eau Claire, like overlooking the river, etc.
Why are you doxing this man?
It looks like he's got some decoration going since I was there, if it's the same place.
And this view. Is how you can tell that he doesn't like the song?
No, I can tell just the space between his hat and his gaiter. I can tell it's in his eyes.
We need your list.
Okay, I'm ready. And this was a challenge because, to be honest, as we said earlier, I looked up on Folklore much more favorably after hearing Evermore. So I wanted to be fair and balanced in not completely being exclusionary to Evermore. So here's where we landed. Opening up with Mirror Ball.
Wow. Mm. Bold.
I wanted that tingle. I wanted to feel alive right from the jump.
A fuzzy beginning.
But also like a magic dust. There's magic dust on that record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then we hit an Invisible String.
All right.
Then here's a pivot, Gold Rush.
I like it.
That's the same order as my first two.
Your top half is actually pretty close to mine.
Oh, intriguing.
Yeah. Gold Rush hitting right into Champagne Problems.
Second appearance of that. Interesting. Okay.
Track 5, very important. Obviously, it's Betty. I'm not doing all this with the whole trilogy.
Right.
Because the whole trilogy doesn't hold up.
Agreed.
But Betty, vibrant, alive, musical. Let's give it the place of pride, number 5. Going into Closure, if we're really going to stick in that energy level, let's go into Closure right after that, followed by Hoax.
Ooh, only appearance of Hoax.
Mid-album readjustment, chiropracting, Dr. Cracks energy. We're going to go a bit to the 1 right now, which I know it's a natural first song, but it's also a bit of a palate cleanse.
Yeah, I could see that.
For the record, Karen, I had Hoax on my list.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry, Joe.
I thought it was my second to last track. I thought I didn't like Hoax as much, but then I watched the Long Pond Sessions and I realized it's good. It's just way at the end of Folklore.
Right. It's at the end. Right. It's at the desert. It's at the end of the desert.
I'm sorry for your Hoax erasure, Joe.
It's okay.
So Hoax, then the 1, then Illicit Affairs, then Exile, because we're getting into the kind of like
thematically,
the long maw of the record. Going into Dorothea.
Wow.
Then to 7. Then Coney Island.
Oh, John.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Again, and Joe, I did kind of the opposite of you, which is like, I like Coney Island. I don't know if I love it, but I felt like it needed to be here, like structurally in service of the sequence. I wanted it to be here, even if on a pure level, maybe it's not like an A+ for me.
It's funny. I remember you guys liking Seven a lot when we talked Folklore, and that one didn't hit me right away and actually didn't make my master list. But I feel like Evermore is Seven, the album.
Ooh.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting. No, I'm open to that read. All right. So Seven into Coney Island, then Long Story Short into Tis the Damn Season, closing out after Tis the Damn Season. Again, same impulse, different direction. This Is Me Trying.
Yeah, that works. That works.
I feel like this version of the record would have me weeping like a baby on the floor. I just would be inconsolable.
Make the playlist. We'll listen to it.
I would absolutely be inconsolable if I heard this. If I arrived at these songs in this order cold, oh, I'd be ruined. I'd be absolutely ruined.
I want to do one more sort of meta pullback thing before we end and just say that the fact that we could all four have fun with this exercise and do this sort of like mythology based fan servicey sort of, you know, like we're basically like Star Trek fans writing fan fiction. Like,
yep.
To me, that is a credit to the Taylor Swift universe and specifically the universe that she's built during this pandemic.
I mean, yes, she is the hero of the pandemic. There's no question.
Unless you think BFB the Pac-Man is the hero of the pandemic. You know, it's like,
he's great as well.
Yes, we also support BFB the Pac-Man. Even though these albums didn't do for me what previous Taylor Swift records have done for me, the fact that she is still most of the time nailing a kind of vividness and clarity of songwriting and structure and reframed it through this lens. I don't love the lens, but most of the kind of essential stuff is still there. My question that I found myself leaving this whole big project, which is to say listening to the two albums together, trying to think of it as one big glug of music, is where does Taylor pivot when you can go back out on the road? Where does Taylor pivot when you can play a stadium? Where does Taylor pivot when you actually have inputs that are not just as far as your couch or your fridge or your boyfriend singing the hook to Betty in the other room? When you can take in the world again in a different way, are we going to think of this as the outlier period? I think for a lot of people, they thought the Reputation was the outlier period. Is this going to be the outlier period, or is this the 1.0 for the next era writ large?
I mean, I don't know how to answer that, but I would love to see her take aspects of this into the arena show. We're so used to the idea of that to fill an arena, to play an arena, it has to be like a pop spectacular. And I think that she could probably, I mean, I fear this will be the dreaded mid part of the set where everybody settles in for the acoustic, you know, in the middle part of the stadium.
And I go
stage
get merch.
B, yeah. But I would love to see her turn that on its head. And I think she can. The number of songs that are strong enough, I think, to hold an arena in this way, I think she can pull it off.
Is there a viable version of Taylor that makes centrist mainstream 2021 era pop music that comes out of this on the other side of the pandemic? Or is this really just a hand tipping of saying this is the kind of artist she wants to be in her 30s?
I think if she wants to make singer-songwriter music throughout her 30s, she'll never not be writing huge hooks. Even these quiet mid-tempo songs still have those in there. I think what this has done more than anything else is just teach her that she can break all the rules that she thought existed from 1989 on. You know, I just think like this is just looser, you know, and the fact that she went even from Folklore to something even more loose. Like, I just think that she's sort of like broken the mold of her own making, and whatever she makes from now on, even if it's brighter or more world beating in terms of its sound, I think there'll always be aspects of this. And I think it's a really important moment for her as a songwriter to realize she can do this thing that maybe felt like it belonged to somebody else before.
That said, Taylor, if you want to go make an album with Drake, I fully support that. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, JP. On a Saturday night, RIP Charlie Pride. That's our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Get on the Facebook group or email us to podcast@nytimes.com with your thoughts about Taylor or with questions for the listener mailbag, which is going to be coming up soon. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. Our producer, as ever, is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. Let's go out with a touch of Taylor brightness from the top of this record, Evermore. This is Willa.
The more that you say, the less I know. Whatever you stray, I follow. I'm begging for you to take my hand. Wreck my plans, that's my man. Life was a willow and it bent.